This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We have never seen a Good Friday or Holy Weekend like this in modern history. The coronavirus pandemic has changed the way we worship and for some raised new questions about our faith. Well, tonight we are looking for the good in a very bad time. How do we find it? And what does it look like? Well, joining me to talk about this are Dr. Yolanda Pierce, Dean of Howard University School of Divinity, and Vita McCoy, co-pastor of the Judah Christian Center in Clinton, Maryland. Lines are open tonight. I want to hear from you about the good that you have been able to find in these very difficult and dark times. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. You know, I want to thank you, ladies, for spending some time with us, because I'm sure that there are challenges to how you are even performing your duties during these difficult times. Dean Pierce, talk to me from your perspective about finding the good during this difficult time.
Well, thank you so much for having us on tonight.
Sure.
It is Good Friday for Christians. For many around the world, they are beginning what is a weekend-long process of commemorating the life and the death, the crucifixion, and then ultimately on Sunday, the resurrection of Jesus. But given that we are in this global pandemic, given that people are far away from their families, can't even worship together, the question of what's good is an important question, because I think it distills for us, what is Good Friday really about? If this holiday season is about the cooking, the gathering, the getting together, I mean, I make a mean macaroni and cheese myself. If it's only about that, then I think the good might be the time to reflect on what is the true meaning for this particular season. What does it mean as Christians around the world think about who is Jesus? What was the sacrifice made for me? Why do we celebrate the resurrection? So I'll say that the good part of Good Friday, even during a pandemic, is that we have the chance to get it right. We have the chance to take seriously the message of our faith.
Pastor McCoy, can you share an example with our listeners about the kind of good, maybe even the unexpected good, that you have seen over the past several weeks? Pastor McCoy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much.
Good evening, everyone. Dean Pierce, thank you so much. The kind of good that I have observed from the spiritual perspective has been the resilience of faith, and how faith is for difficult times. And sometimes we glamorize the Christianity and the walk itself, but your faith is for troubled times. Your faith is to get you through those times where you don't know how you're going to make it, and you rely on God. And in a natural sense, in a practical sense, we have seen people rise to the occasion. We have seen people go above and beyond. We have seen the faith community come together. We have seen people in education and in neighborhoods come together. And as Christians, when we think about what Jesus means to us, he is about service. He is about loving your neighbor. And if you don't have a test, then you don't have a testimony. If there is a need, if there's not a need, then there's not a place for someone to fill that need. And none of us expected for the Easter season to look like this, or these times to look like this, but that's what faith is for. Faith drives you to your knees and points you to the cross, the hope of the cross, the hope of what Jesus did on the cross, and how he overcame even his own reservations and fears and disappointments, and fulfilled his assignment. And so it has to translate into an active work. It has to translate into meeting the needs of the current time. Faith without works is dead. And Jesus, our example, said, I was hungry and you didn't feed me. I was naked and you didn't clothe me. So we are seeing faith in action during this pandemic.
You know, one of the good things that actually happened this week was a volunteer effort by about 30 people in Prince George's County. They decided to sew masks for the University of Maryland Prince George's Hospital Center. District 5 Prince George's County Council Member Jolene Ivey was one of the volunteers. I spoke to her about it earlier this week, and this is what she told me.
And he gave me some basic guidelines, which we have followed. We had our design approved by him, and we've been just cranking them out. After a few weeks, he asked us if we could add a surgical mask to our repertoire. So since then, the hospital has been supplying us with some special fabric and a particular pattern, and so we've been making those.
Mm-hmm. She was talking about the president and CEO of the hospital who shared with her the need for these masks, not only surgical masks, but also, you know, masks for staff. Over the past several weeks, these volunteers have sewn nearly 400 masks. Nobody asked them to do that. This was something that they took on because they were seeing the problems that were happening in New York and the problems that were happening in Washington State and California and on and on and on and on. And to see this kind of activity good in the midst of the bad, Dean Pierce, I think is not only heartwarming, but it really is a magnificent act of selflessness.
It absolutely is. How will people know that we are believers, that we are followers? By our actions, by the things that we do. We can talk about the gospel, or we can actually be the hands and feet of Jesus. We can actually do the work. And you see people in the middle of this crisis doing the work. They are sewing masks. They're delivering food for their neighbors. They're picking up prescriptions for their elders. And so we have a unique opportunity to not just talk the talk, but we have the unique opportunity to really walk the walk. While the good often reveals the disparities that are happening in our society, we get to ask the question, why are there so few masks? Why are there so few supplies? Why are there things that are missing and disrupting our supply chain? We also get to acknowledge that in extraordinary times, ordinary people will do extraordinary things.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810. We're talking about finding the good in a very bad time. This is our Good Friday conversation. Let me go to Walter. Walter calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Walter. What's on your mind?
Good evening, everybody. How about that we wake up that we're alive? We should praise God and say, thank God for letting me live another day.
Hey. Thank you, Walter. Those are, you know, some of the, you know, those simple things that we often hear, even when times are good, but particularly now, they are very important because the reality is that we know that thousands of people have not, you know, enjoyed the, you know, a sense of life being impacted by this coronavirus pandemic. I want to ask you about this really critical piece, Pastor McCoy, because I'm sure that you are feeling this and many other churches in this area and, of course, around the nation are feeling this. Churches are struggling because they don't have people in the pews. Are pastors okay? Are you okay? What are your pastoral colleagues talking about right now?
Well, we are talking about pastoring our people. making sure that we show up in their lives, making sure that we provide ministry to them in the ways that we can. And one thing about the side of Christianity that is prophetic is that you may feel caught off guard, but you are not without signs and warnings and preparation. And so social media, digital platforms, live streaming has been around for a while. We didn't know that we would have to use it in this way, but it was there for us. And so we just began to immediately, you need a village, you need a hub, you need a core that you talk through this with. I have several circles in that way. And we've had breakdowns where we miss our people and we feel like we are inadequate to meet the needs of what we're going through right now. But we are the shepherd and they are the sheep, and we are praying for them. We are showing up for them. We are definitely using social media. We have our ears at the heart and the mouth of God so that we can know what we should do for our people. We are pulling our teams together. And I would say that this is the best time for something like this to happen, because we do have the tools to still make ministry available. But it is definitely something that you have to go inward first and then to your circle for support and ideas. You have to stay prayed up, and then you just have to trust and believe that since God has ordained and ordered your steps to this place, that he will give you the grace for the place. And where he leaves, he keeps. And where he sends, he provides. And so we have to release it to God and trust and just minister to our people, be transparent and say, we are in this together, and we just continue to show up as the shepherds.
But speaking to the issue of transparency, because let's be flat-footed and plain-spoken. As we have seen with businesses around the nation, some of them are not going to return because, like people, like households, people are living paycheck to paycheck. And I think one of the things that this has revealed about churches is that their resources are limited based on what happens with the collection plate on Sunday. And so big churches, small churches are going to suffer. How can ministries survive? How will they be able to adapt financially when everyone is hurting?
It's going to be very difficult. It is actually going to be very difficult. This is a moment of a hard reset, right? As if you were rebooting your computer or you're resetting your phone, in which ministries, both large and small, will have to reevaluate what they provide for their communities, how they can continue to provide it, and whether or not, frankly, they will survive this. And hard decisions will have to be made. But it's an interesting conversation to have during this particular season, because resurrection people, as Christians are, believe that some things may die, but some new things will be reborn. Some new things can be birthed. There is life after death. And so it is a time for ministries to evaluate, can we do ministry completely and radically and transformatively different than we've done it before, because our survival actually depends on it? How are we going to do this business of ministry in a new way? Because there's going to be a new normal. We're not ever going to go back to the same condition that we were in before. How are we going to do ministry in this new normal? It will require transformative action, including transformative preaching. We can't even preach the same sermons anymore.
Yeah, how about that? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about finding the good during a very bad time. How do you find a silver lining when all seems so dark and there is no light at the end of the tunnel? You know, Dean Pierce...
Brother, Harold?
Yes.
I just wanted to add something to that conversation.
Please go right ahead.
Yes, about whether churches will return. I would say that the churches will return stronger than ever, but it has to be different. I agree with Dean Pierce. We have felt for a long time. We planted our church in 2004. Right after 2004 was the economic, the real estate budget, and then church just changed, period. Social media changed it. And then, so there's been this ever, the ground has been shifting for a while. And we have all been saying, you know, we don't want church as usual. There's something else. Then the millennials came. People are looking for something different. And so now we are at a place where we are forced to reevaluate what real ministry is. We always say that the church is not the building. The church is the people. And so now we are forced to look at it and say, you know, a church like ours is said there will be no more mega churches. Everybody now is a micro church. Everybody now is a hands-on church. What do seekers in the 21st century, what do they need spiritually? What do they need from their local assembly? What do they need from their pastors and those gatherings in the form of ministry? Now is the time where we've been kind of scratching the surface of it, but now we have to say, you know, is this what we're going to do? Our service went from being an hour and a half, sometimes close to 2 hours, to now we're at 45 to 55 minutes.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting that and you're not alone in that particular regard. And we have seen the evolution of how people worship, not just Christians, but all levels and different ways of faith. And so I think you make an excellent point. I need to take a break, but the lines are still open. I want to hear from our listeners. How do you find the good during bad times, particularly a coronavirus pandemic? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. And we want to ask you to tune in this Sunday at 6 p.m. for HUR at Home Inspirations with Jackie Gales Webb. It's going to be on Instagram at WHURFM. Our special guest will be Pastor Howard John Wesley of Alfred Street Baptist Church and gospel artist Donald Lawrence at 6 p.m. HUR at Home Inspirations with Jackie Gales Webb on Instagram. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in about 15 seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. On this Good Friday, we're talking about finding the good during very difficult times. My guests are Dr. Yolanda Pierce, Dean of Howard University School of Divinity, and Vita McCoy, co-pastor of the Judah Christian Center in Clinton, Maryland. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dean Pierce, I want you to finish your thought about the evolution of worship, particularly in the Black church in modern times, and how where we are right now will play into that, and perhaps finding the good in how the faithful evolve.
Absolutely. So I do agree. I think that when this pandemic is over, or when we no longer need to practice social distancing, people will return back to the church physically because, of course, we love being in fellowship with one another. However, here's the difference. This past Sunday, because, of course, like many others, I'm at home, I attended 4 different services online. I got to hear some of my wonderful friends preach at their various services from North Carolina all the way up to New Jersey. So people's norms are changing. I got to hear 4 really good messages. They weren't very long. I got a good nugget, and I kept it moving. So what I'm trying to say is that, yes, people are going to be seeking that in-person fellowship, but they're going to be looking for places that are, one, going to be providing them with answers to real life, hard, tough questions. And two, they're going to be looking to get in and get out because we've gotten real comfortable sitting at home in our pajamas, you know, being able to turn on Alfred Street or Glen Arden and get a word and then go and move on to the next one. How are we going to do things differently? In theological studies, the question that we talk about quite a bit is theodicy. Where is God when there is suffering? Where is God when there is evil? Where is God when so much is going wrong? If your church doesn't have real concrete answers for questions like that, trust me, someone is going to leave and find a place that does. We have to have clergy that are trained for the moment that is coming up. It's not going to be enough to just raise a tune and give a hoop. People have real questions, and they need real answers, and they're not going to be afraid to hop from place to place in order to find those answers.
Let me ask you something about that. And, you know, Pastor McCoy, you can chime in on this as well, because you said something that struck me. Governments, communities, families. We've heard this on the news for the past month. No one has prepared for this. No one could have foreseen this kind of interruption of the way the world turns. What kind of training could you have to address this kind of steep mountain climbing? I'll start with you, Dean Pearson, then Pastor McCoy. I'll let you chime in.
One of the most interesting pieces of this is that if you know church history well, then you would understand that the early church were house churches. They were gatherings of 7, 8, 9, 10 people. They weren't buildings. They weren't cathedrals. They weren't massive, beautiful sanctuaries. They were literally just a few people gathered for a meal to talk about the Messiah, the chosen one, the Christ. And so if you know history well enough, then you actually have a paradigm that might actually work. We have been, at least in the city of D.C., limited to a gathering of 10 or less. So what would it look like if historically we actually return to what the early church looked like? What if you have enough training so that you know how those house churches connected with one another and fellowshiped with one another without the need of a massive 6,500-seat sanctuary? What I'm saying is that a certain level of training and historical understanding would actually get you back to the roots and grounding of what our faith has traditionally been and not the man-made thing that we've created. We've created religion. God has called us to a faith.
Interesting. Pastor McCoy?
Absolutely. There has been a lot of discussion, especially for those of us, we came out of those large churches, and a lot of us, our ministry gifts helped to build those churches, whether it was in music or ministry or the choir or whatever. And so as we try then to go and replicate that, and knowing that we are doing what the Lord has called us to do, the question has been, was that ever the design? Was that ever the intention? And Jesus had a small group. He had 12. And so the idea of the small group is effective. That is where discipleship really happens. Transformation really happens. Transparency for growth really happens. And what happens in the crowd sometimes is that the crowd does not become a congregation, right? The crowd remains a crowd. And we've become very comfortable in these massive buildings, or even some of the ones that are not so large, but they're We make them beautiful, and it's all about, you know, exchanging hallelujahs with people who already know God. And evangelism, the really not evangelism even in standing on the corner passing out pamphlets. I'm talking about the evangelism that comes from sharing your story, your conversion story, your experience, the Christology in you. Who is Jesus Christ to you? What is his role in your life? That went to sleep in the last few centuries, in the 20th and the 21st century. And now we were very comfortable inside the four walls of the church, but the world needs what's been happening inside of the church, and now we are only outside. And so I think that we are like Esther in that we have been called to the kingdom for such a time as this. And if we can just get over our shock that our lives have changed forever, the dean is right. We are not going back to life as usual. We are not going back to church as usual. And many say a good thing. That's a good thing, because there's a part of it that was not working for everyone, especially those who needed to go from the crowd to the congregation to the core. They needed a place to ask those questions. Why did this happen to me in my life? Why is life so hard? Why is there suffering? Why, you know, and that happens in the smaller setting. So in that sense, there's good even in the challenging and bad times.
You know, I have another example of finding the good during bad times. The question comes up, would you spend your life savings to help your community through the pandemic? Now, this story comes from our news partners at WTOP.
When 7-year-old Kavanaugh Bell of Gaithersburg learned about the pandemic, he worried about his grandmother.
Because my grandma has asthma, so I decided to make care packs for her.
But as he was shopping for that care pack with his mom, he started thinking about the other seniors who live near his grandmother.
And then he kept saying, well, let's get this for her friend Mary, and let's get this for her friend Beverly.
Mom Lacey Simmons says as he kept adding to the list, she explained it was getting expensive and she couldn't buy it all right now. That's when he decided to spend his own money.
It was $640 that I've been saving from birthdays and Christmases.
His life savings he'd been socking away to buy an iPhone someday. His charitable giving has grown from delivering care packs to those seniors now to a community pantry where he's hoping to offer food and supplies to 1,000 people in need. Michelle Morello, WTOP News.
You know, one of the other things that also happened this week, and this was something that was announced by Governor Larry Hogan with the state of Maryland. And we've seen other instances around like this in other parts of the country where, and Pastor McCoy, I think you kind of touched on it. Talking about the survivors and the successes, because we don't, you know, you have to understand that, you know, particularly from the perspective of those of us who are reporting the news, that we have to give people the, you know, the information that is going to help them best and to move them to action and during this particular time to stay socially distant, to look out for their loved ones, their friends, and their neighbors. And we're going to start hearing stories from the people who have come out on the other side of this. And this is not just the medical piece. This is not just about the statistics, but I think, you know, Dean Pierce, this is also about an opportunity to inspire those people who unfortunately are only hearing bad news and may very well be despondent. Because right now in the state of Maryland, for example, we have about 400 people who have been infected, who were in varying degrees of illness, from severe to showing light, very, very light symptoms. And now they are out of this. And the other thing that is coming out of this, and certainly this is still in the very beginning stages, of looking at how their plasma may lead to a vaccine to deal with this. And I think that's one of the most fascinating pieces of the good that has come out of this worldwide tragedy.
We are seeing so much good. It reminds us that there are possibilities within humanity that we often don't discuss, right? I'm a native New Yorker, and family and friends in New York City, and the news outside of New York has been grim, 800 deaths one day. But along with that story were other stories, stories of people sacrificing their ventilators so someone else could have one, stories of people sharing their food, stories of people helping other people to the emergency room, stories of neighbors doing other things for neighbors. And we need to focus on those stories because those are the memories that we'll need to take in order to rebuild the beloved community that we absolutely need in order to survive. So coronavirus is not going away. We may lift social distancing. There is currently no vaccine, and one day there might be even a more deadly virus. So the landscape has changed. But what can change along with that is our understanding of how much we need each other to survive. Yes, government programs are important. Yes, the kind of social infrastructure that absolutely is critical to getting us back to work and to getting this nation back on its feet. Yes. But people to people, I remind people during this season, Jesus did a few things. Jesus healed people, fed people, and told stories. So that's our example. Are we helping to feed people? Are we helping people to get whole, to be healed? Are we telling stories, being company with one another, loving one another? Those are things that we can do even in the face of crisis.
I think that's exceptionally well put. I need to take another break, but when we come back, I do want to hear about those stories that you have encountered this week. Did you hear something or share something with a member of your congregation or somebody in your neighborhood? Something that made you feel good in the midst of all of this bad? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about finding the good in severely difficult times. My guests are Dr. Yolanda Pierce, Dean of the Howard University School of Divinity, and Vita McCoy, co-pastor of the Judah Christian Center in Clinton, Maryland. Of course, our lines are still open if you have a comment or question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pastor McCoy, tell me a story. What happened good that surprised you?
We were not set up for a feeding center. And through connection and partnership, that is one of the things that has really come out of this. One of my sisters had a partnership with Manna Corporation, and she's a pastor here, and sometimes we get a little, you know, scared and, you know, about sharing, but she put it out there, and we were able to give food to members of our congregation through that partnership. And they were so blessed by it, and they were happy to get it. And we also asked members of our ministerial staff to pick up, you know, there was a shortage of bleach and water and wipes and those kinds of things. And so we were able to stock or make an inventory of that. And we did not have a team or a staff to do that at all, but through volunteer, we've talked about it, through volunteerism and people just showing up and saying, I will do that. I'll pick up an extra case of water, or I'll go to the truck and load the food in my car. And so we have seen people rise to the occasion in this way. And another thing that has happened is people who were extremely dependent on others and gatherings and other people's testimonies are now, I can't tell you the text messages that I get saying, my faith is stronger. I'm learning to pray. I'm learning to read the scriptures for myself. So both on a spiritual and on a practical or natural realm, we're seeing some good stories.
Yes, indeed. So what about you, Dean Pierce? What happened this week that was really good that may have taken you by surprise?
Well, you know, of course, as part of the university, Howard University, and like so many other schools, we've had to transition to online learning. We've had to send students home. This has been happening all over the nation. One of the things that really makes my heart glad is how many people very privately, very quietly assisted with helping us to get students home, assisted financially with students who did not have computers or laptops or devices so that they could have something so that they can go online. There are people who are helping, and they don't want any credit and they don't want any praise. But I've seen the Howard family and certainly the DMV, you know, really come together to help students. One of the other things that I saw that really gladdened my heart, that Pastor Reverend Dr. Leslie Callahan out of Philadelphia, she and her congregation obviously practicing social distancing at her church. And so a team of her members mailed palms to every single member of the church, knowing that they would not be gathered together for Palm Sunday. And so that when she did her service online for Palm Sunday, that the members were able to wave their palms in their respective homes. So again, thinking about doing ministry differently, just thinking about, you know, the people making phone calls to their elders and their family. How are you doing? Sometimes the elders just want to talk. They may have all their material needs, but they're lonely, and so they want to talk. So people are doing some really wonderful and positive things.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. One of the things that struck me over the past several weeks, and this is something that's much more subtle, where when people were in, you know, the grocery stores, because I haven't been to the grocery store in 3 weeks. But even when I went, one of the things that really struck me was how cordial people were, how nice they were. And I think the subtlety is that in the past, you wouldn't know whether they were being nice or not because they just kind of ignored you. They went on about their business. But the thing that I noticed was the glances and the kind of smiles, the shrugs, the what are you going to do? You know, that kind of, yeah. You know what I mean? you know, I'm
we're
here.
We're in this together.
Yeah, we're in this together. The comment about, yeah, there's toilet paper back there. You don't have to rush. There are paper. Right. That little thing or even, you know, somebody saying, gosh, I'm looking for cleaning products. And they say, well, you know, I didn't see any at Giant, but if you go over to this place, you might get lucky. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that kind of communication with people that you have no other connection to other than the fact that you are in human being and that you are human beings and you're in the same mess together. It's subtle, but you really feel it.
You can feel it.
Mm-hmm. You know, you really, really do. And I think that it is unfortunate that we have to be here to get there. Mm-hmm. But I think that when we come out of it, it will also present to us a way of thinking that we do really need each other. Mm-hmm.
Crisis distills everything to its essence. I think that's what you're describing, right? Mm-hmm. Which is that in a crisis, you see what's important. Family's important. Having food and shelter, that's important. That head nod, that look of we're in this together, it really distills us down to the essence. That's what the soul and the spirit needs. We've realized we can do it without a lot of stuff. We might miss it, but we can do without a lot of stuff. But our health, absolutely critical in this time. So the fact that we're healthy, that the three of us are having this conversation, that there are listeners who are not in the hospital, if ever there was a time to thank God, it is a time right now that we have our reasonable portion of health and strength. That's what the saints would say growing up, have a reasonable portion of your health and strength.
Yeah, I guess the thing, you know.
It takes times like these to make us remember that all we have is right now. We always think we have more of everything, time, you know, especially. And times like these remind us that all you have is right now, and you have to remember what is really important, what makes us human, what makes us alive.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, what you were talking about earlier.
And the thing that I miss most of all, and it just occurred to me, is that I come from a very affectionate family, and I have not hugged my 21-year-old daughter in a month. Mm. And that's troublesome to me, because she's going to be graduating from Howard next month. And I saw her a month ago with her mask and her gloves and all of that stuff. And it's not a surprise, because I love her dearly. But I think that that's the thing that's most difficult and most painful for me, that I haven't hugged the picklehead girl in a month.
But the next hug,
yes,
will mean so much.
Yeah.
And whereas before, it would probably be inconsequential, right? But the next hug will be one that you will remember forever.
Yeah.
And that's good out of bad times.
And I look for her to say, okay, Dad, you can let me go. That's not happening. Look, I want to thank both of you for spending some time with us on this Good Friday as you continue to social distance physically, but spiritually being closer than ever. Dr. Yolanda Pierce and Pastor Vita McCoy, God bless you both, and please,
God bless you.
Please be safe.
God bless you. Thank you so
God
much.
Bless you. Stay
Absolutely.
Safe.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141, for this Good Friday, April 10th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Stay safe, everyone, and have a good weekend.